Crawford versus Marion County Election Board. Justice Souter, with whom Justice Ginsburg joins, dissenting. Indiana's voter ID law threatens to impose non-trivial burdens on the voting right of tens of thousands of the state's citizens, and a significant percentage of those individuals are likely to be deterred from voting. The statute is unconstitutional under the balancing standard of Burdick versus Takushi, 1992. A state may not burden the right to vote merely by invoking abstract interests, be they legitimate or even compelling, but must make a particular factual showing that threats to its interests outweigh the particular impediments it has imposed. The state has made no such justification here, and as to some aspects of its law, it has hardly even tried. I therefore respectfully dissent from the court's judgment sustaining the statute. Part 1. Voting rights cases raise two competing interests, the one side being the fundamental right to vote. It is beyond cavil that voting is of the most fundamental significance under our constitutional structure. The judiciary is obliged to train a skeptical eye on any qualification of that right, especially since the right to exercise the franchise in a free and unimpaired manner is preservative of other basic civil and political rights. Any alleged infringement of the right of citizens to vote must be carefully and meticulously scrutinized. As against the unfettered right, however, lies the common sense as well as constitutional law that government must play an active role in structuring elections. As a practical matter, there must be a substantial regulation of elections if they are to be fair and honest, and if some sort of order rather than chaos is to accompany the democratic processes. Election laws will invariably impose some burden upon individual voters. Given the legitimacy of interests on both sides, we have avoided preset levels of scrutiny in favor of a sliding scale balancing analysis. The scrutiny varies with the effect of the regulation at issue, and whatever the claim, the court has long made a careful ground-level appraisal both of the practical burdens on the right to vote and of the state's reasons for imposing those precise burdens. Thus, in Burdick, a court considering such a challenge must weigh the character and magnitude of the asserted injury to the rights protected by the First and Fourteenth Amendments that the plaintiff seeks to vindicate against the precise interests put forward by the state as justifications for the burden imposed by its rule, taking into consideration the extent to which those interests make it necessary to burden the plaintiff's rights. The lead opinion does not disavow these basic principles, but I think it does not insist enough on the hard facts that our standard of review demands. Part 2. Under Burdick, the rigorousness of our inquiry into the propriety of state election law depends upon the extent to which a challenged regulation burdens First and Fourteenth Amendment rights. Upon an assessment of the character and magnitude of the asserted threatened injury, and an estimate of the number of voters likely to be affected. Section A. The first set of burdens shown in these cases is the travel costs and fees necessary to get one of the limited variety of federal or state photo identifications needed to cast a regular ballot under the voter ID law. The travel is required for the personal visit to a licensed branch of the Indiana Bureau of Motor Vehicles, BMV, which is demanded of anyone applying for a driver's license or non-driver photo identification. The need to travel to the BMV branch will affect voters according to their circumstances, with the average person probably viewing it as nothing more than an inconvenience. Poor, old, and disabled voters who do not drive a car, however, may find the trip prohibitive. Witness the fact that the BMV has far fewer license branches in each county than there are voting precincts. Marion County, for example, has over 900 active voting precincts, yet only 12 BMV license branches. In Lake County, there are 565 active voting precincts to match up with only 8 BMV locations, and Allen County, with 309 active voting precincts, has only 3 BMV license branches. The same pattern holds in counties with smaller populations. Brown County has 12 active voter precincts and only 1 BMV office, while there were 18 polling places available in Fayette County's 2007 municipal primary. There was only one BMV license branch, and Henry County, with 42 polling places approved for 2008 elections, had only one DMV office. The burden of traveling to a more distant DMV office rather than a conveniently located polling place is probably serious for many of the individuals who lack photo identification. They almost certainly will not own cars, and public transportation in Indiana is fairly limited. According to a report published by Indiana's Department of Transportation in August 2007, 21 of Indiana's 92 counties have no public transportation system at all, and as of 2000, nearly one in every 10 voters lived within one of these 21 counties. Among the counties with some public system, 21 provide service only within certain cities, and 32 others restrict public transportation to regional county service, leaving only 18 that offer countywide public transportation. State officials recognize the effect that travel costs can have on voter turnout, as in Marion County, for example, where efforts have been made to establish most polling places in locations even more convenient than the statutory minimum in order to provide for neighborhood voting. Although making voters travel farther than what is convenient for most and possible for some does not amount to a severe burden under verdict, that is no reason to ignore the burden altogether. It translates into an obvious economic cost, whether in work time lost or getting and paying for transportation, that an Indiana voter must bear to obtain an ID. For those voters who can afford the round trip, a second financial hurdle appears. In order to get photo identification for the first time, they need to present a birth certificate, a certificate of naturalization, U.S. veterans photo identification, U.S. military photo identification, or a U.S. passport. As the lead opinion says, the two most common of these documents come at a price. Indiana counties charge anywhere from $3 to $12 for a birth certificate, and in some states the fee is significantly higher. And that same price must usually be paid for a first-time passport, since a birth certificate is required to prove U.S. citizenship by birth. The total fees for a passport, moreover, are up to about $100. So most voters must pay at least one fee to get the ID necessary to cast a regular ballot. As with the travel costs, these fees are far from shocking on their face, but in the burdick analysis, it matters that both the travel costs and the fees are disproportionately heavy for, and thus disproportionately likely to deter, the poor, the old, and the immobile. Section B. To be sure, Indiana has a provisional ballot exception to the ID requirement for individuals the state considers indigent, as well as those with religious objections to being photographed. And this sort of exception could in theory provide a way around the costs of procuring an ID. But Indiana's chosen exception does not amount to much relief. The law allows those voters who lack the necessary ID to sign the poll book and cast a provisional ballot. As the lead opinion recognizes, though, that's only the first step. To have the provisional ballot counted, a voter must then appear in person before the circuit court clerk or county election board within 10 days of the election to sign an affidavit attesting to indigency or religious objection to being photographed, or to present an ID at that point. Unlike the trip to the DMV, which, assuming things go smoothly, needs to be made only once every 4 years for renewal of non-driver photo identification, this one must be taken every time a poor person or religious objector wishes to vote, because the state does not allow an affidavit to count in successive elections. And unlike the trip to the DMV, which at least has a handful of licensed branches in the more populous counties, a county has only one county seat. Forcing these people to travel to the county seat every time they try to vote is particularly onerous for the reason noted already, that most counties in Indiana either lack public transportation or offer only limited coverage. That the need to travel to the county seat each election amounts to a high hurdle is shown in the results of the 2007 municipal elections in Marion County, to which Indiana's voter ID law applied. 34 provisional ballots were cast, but only two provisional voters made it to the county clerk's office within the 10 days. All 34 of these aspiring voters appeared at the appropriate precinct, 33 of them provided a signature, and every signature matched the one on file. 26 of the 32 voters whose ballots were not counted had a history of voting in Marion County elections. All of this suggests that provisional ballots do not obviate the burdens of getting photo identification. And even if that were not so, the provisional ballot option would be inadequate for a further reason. The indigency exception, by definition, offers no relief to those voters who do not consider themselves or would not be considered indigent, but as a practical matter would find it hard for non-financial reasons to get the required ID, most obviously the disabled. Section C. Indiana's voter ID law thus threatens to impose serious burdens on the voting right, even if not severe ones, and the next question under Burdick is whether the number of individuals likely to be affected is significant as well. Record evidence and facts open to judicial notice answer yes. Although the district court found that petitioners failed to offer any reliable empirical study of numbers of voters affected, we may accept that court's rough calculation that 43,000 voting age residents lack the kind of identification card required by Indiana's law. The district court made that estimate by comparing BMV records reproduced in petitioner's statistician's report with U.S. Census Bureau figures for Indiana's voting age population in 2004, and the state does not argue that these raw data are unreliable. The state, in fact, shows no discomfort with the district court's finding that an estimated 43,000 individuals, about 1% of the state's voting age population, lack qualifying ID. If the state's willingness to take that number is surprising, it may be less so in light of the district court's observation that several factors suggest the percentage of Indiana's voting age population with photo identification is actually lower than 99%, a suggestion in line with national surveys showing roughly 6 to 10% of voting age Americans without a state-issued photo identification card. We have been offered no reason to think that Indiana does a substantially better job of distributing IDs than other states. So a fair reading of the data supports the district court's finding that around 43,000 Indiana residents lack the needed identification and will bear the burdens the law imposes. To be sure, the 43,000 figure has to be discounted to some extent, residents from certain nursing homes being exempted from the photo identification requirement. But the state does not suggest that this narrow exception could possibly reduce 43,000 to an insubstantial number. The upshot is this. Tens of thousands of voting age residents lack the necessary photo identification. A large proportion of them are likely to be in bad shape economically. The voter ID law places hurdles in the way of either getting an ID or of voting provisionally, and they translate into non-trivial economic costs. There is accordingly no reason to doubt that a significant number of state residents will be discouraged or disabled from voting. Petitioners, to be sure, failed to nail down precisely how great the cohort of discouraged and totally deterred voters will be, but empirical precision beyond the foregoing numbers has never been demanded for raising a voting rights claim. While, of course, it would greatly aid a plaintiff to establish his claims beyond mathematical doubt, he does enough to show that serious burdens are likely. Thus, petitioner's case is clearly strong enough to prompt more than a cursory examination of the state's asserted interests. And the fact that Indiana's photo identification requirement is one of the most restrictive in the country makes a critical examination of the state's claims all the more in order.